Hey y'all, welcome to Religiously Incorrect. I'm Pastor Todd, and you know my partner, Pastor Jeff. And we have a very special guest
special
with us.
Guest, yes.
I mean, extra super duper special
we
guest.
We are excited tonight.
We paid a lot of money for him to get here, too.
Oh my God, y'all have no idea.
We're going to have to take up an extra offering, Saints, so don't go nowhere.
We sent the limo and everything.
We're going to lock the doors. We're going to get, no. Our very special guest is our friend, our brother, our compatriot in the kingdom, Dr. Dela Cruz, who is a professional counselor, as well as the pastor for how many months now?
For three months
of the Warren United Methodist Church in Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir.
So it's not the Warren United Methodist Church in Warren. Mm. So do not drive around and look for that church because it does not exist. You will have to drive to Pittsburgh. It's so good
Pittsburgh.
To have you.
It's good
Thank
to be
you so much for being
oh,
with
yeah,
us on today.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the show.
We got one.
We got
one.
We got a fan. We got a following.
You're
y'all.
The first fan, Doc. We appreciate it. We appreciate it. So, Jeff, what is our opening topic? It's so fresh.
Before we even open up, can we give a big shout out to this beautiful, look
man.
At this.
Barbershop.
The Black Man's Country Club.
Yes. We're in a barbershop, y'all.
One
this
of my
is
favorite place.
Freeze 5-star barbershop here in Warren, Ohio.
Yes.
He started this in 2015, and now we're on Youngstown Road. What's the address? This is a free plug.
What's the address?
4021 Youngstown Road.
Now, let me give y'all a heads up. Look what he can do.
Right. That's called the free special.
That's the free special
That's
right
the free
here.
Special.
You don't want none of this.
Right.
You don't want no problems. Well, no problems with me.
Exactly. So shout out to Free. This is Barbershop Talk edition of episode 5 of Religiously Incorrect.
Yes,
and so now, Pastor Jeff, if you give us, what's our little starter topic before we get into it?
Our starter topic is Kirk Franklin.
Kirk.
Boycott.
Nephew Kirk. Little man.
Stomp Kirk.
Stomp. GP, are you with me?
Do you want a revelation for Kirk?
Are you with me?
Melodies from heaven, Kirk.
And what did he do or say?
Kirk Franklin, if you've watched the video, if you haven't, I strongly suggest that
just
you go to YouTube.
Today.
It just came out today where he is boycotting TBN as well as
Dove Awards
the
and
Dove
the
Awards,
Gospel,
the
Christian
which is
something
basically the same thing
right.
as the Grammys and this, you know. So what happened was he actually was protesting 3 years ago. It's correct.
Three years ago,
he was protesting the violence against blacks as far as Philando Castile and. He made his boycott known on live TV after he got done accepting his award. And after he got done accepting his award, he made these boycotts known. And, you know, just asked to pray for the families well as the police officers' family. And they cut it out. Obviously, he went to them. He said, you know, he talked about his frustration and how he was upset about it. They told him this would not happen again.
It wouldn't happen.
Three years later. Same thing happens.
Wow.
You know, same thing happens. He gets another award. He does the same thing. He
Tatiana Jefferson.
one in
Fort Worth, who got shot in her own home.
And he said he wanted to pray for her. He wanted to pray for the nephew who actually witnessed the shooting.
Absolutely.
Once again, he wanted to pray for the family of the police officer who done the shooting. Again, they cut it out, and he after wise counsel from his pastor, from his friends, he decided that he was no longer going to support or accept awards from the Dove Awards, and he did say he's not asking everybody to protest with him.
Right.
But we want you to know that we stand with Kirk.
We stand with Lil Kirk. We might stand a little taller. We might be a little taller.
Yeah, he is a short bro.
I might not be taller.
Nah,
I'm
you're taller.
The same size.
He's taller than Kirk.
He's not just pint size. He's print size.
Listen, I want to play
with him. Yes, that's for sure.
I want to play Kirk Franklin in a movie, a Lifetime story. I can dance just like
you
Kirk.
You can.
I can dance
you
like can. Kirk.
So we always rap a little bit. Given, and I just want to clarify, he didn't like get up to like say anything rough protesting boycott the first time around. Right. He was literally just making a statement of concern and feeling like it was his duty as a Christian to be in a room with his evangelical brothers, mostly Caucasian, and to be on a platform to bring attention that, you know, the body of Christ has not been as vocal and at the forefront of those issues as they should be. And then he really said that the second time, where he said, we should not be bringing up the rear. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be the last ones.
That's right.
And I felt like the way he presented it when he was actually saying it in the awards show was as compassionate and non-threatening and a gracious, all the things that I'm normally not when I'm when I'm talking about social justice issues. I am not compassionate. And he was like all of those things that I know what it feels like to be sort of scolded because I'm not. Sure. And what does it tell you, like, no matter how good you try to say it, if they don't want to hear it, what does that tell you about the black man's perspective on what's happening, even in the church?
What is profound to me is that he, and you made mention, one of you brothers made mention of this earlier, that he's the only one to do it.
Right.
Where are the rest of the black gospel performers that should be standing along with Kirk Franklin and even with their power and influence saying we need to stand against our evangelical brothers and sisters?
Right.
Not just the way the current politic is, but you as a Christian, the gospel continues to speak to the support of the poor or the least of these.
Absolutely.
And why is our community the community that's not getting justice under the law?
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, the 14th Amendment, I think, or the 4th Amendment. So why aren't we to equal justice?
Equal justice under the law. Equal protection.
And so why aren't we safe when a police officer rolls up on us? And we're Christian. And so why aren't we together speaking about that particular issue? And that's what's really the quietness of the white evangelical community. And furthermore, TBN has been in that park of conservative, straight white evangelical for a very long time.
And you have
time.
To dance to their beat if you want to play the game.
That's
you said something profound to me, and I'll answer my own question, but it's one thing to stand against what we perceive as evil, you know, what is out there. But you said when we have to stand against our evangelical brothers.
Yes.
It almost feels like that's something that we shouldn't say. It sounds so uncouth, so callous, but it's almost like what else is there to do when someone proves to you over and over again that they don't have your concerns at heart? They diminish your concerns, even critique your concerns.
Well, remember Dr. King in the letter in the Birmingham jail. His biggest disappointment as he wrote on the sides of a newspaper.
Right. In a prison. Absolutely.
And again, you know, one of the most prolific writers, if you've ever read anything beyond just the I Have a Dream speech, he writes his disappointment and shares, where have you been?
Right.
Why are you so silent? And we're experiencing that again, and it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I would say, even if we want to go further, even than Dr. Martin Luther King, let's look at what Jesus said. Who is my brother?
Who is my mother?
Those that do the will of God.
Yeah,
and that's what if they're not doing the will of God,
not
standing up for justice, for all, for
that's
all.
Right.
You know, we talk about Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, but we need to stand up for justice for all. And if Black lives are part of the all, which they are, which they are, they got to stand up. And I would just also say this. To me, it's amazing that somebody of his caliber, you know, if I speak out from the church that I'm at, you know, I might get a couple haters, people on Facebook saying stuff. He might lose some money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he did have a forerunner because Lecrae the gospel rapper.
Yes.
Right. Really put himself out there with a few things on Twitter.
Hard and go home.
And he was really in the evangelical CCM world. And he's taken some hits. So I think we just have to be realistic about the world we live in. Mm-hmm. Prejudice, you know, as we say that, you know, deaf don't know no age. Mm-hmm. Prejudice doesn't know a religion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Prejudice doesn't know a faith center.
And in some faiths and in some of the more conservative evangelical circles, racism is taught as a part of a theological belief system.
Correct, correct.
That there were theologies that started in the 60s that, and one well-known preacher of a movement who said that blacks and whites should not get married.
That's right.
I mean, and if you look at every major denomination, I'm a Methodist. I'm actually an ordained Presbyterian minister working as a revitalizer in Pittsburgh. You've had racism in each of the major denominations.
Correct.
But you've also had racism in all of the evangelical churches, even Pentecostal churches.
Correct.
Also.
Correct.
And so it seems like we just keep ignoring this reality that keeps pushing us back 10 or 20 years,
right,
and we can't ignore it anymore.
Well, I stand with Kirk. We all together collectively stand with Kirk, and we hope
that. He get on my shoulders. He's still a short brother. You know what I mean?
Pastors,
I put him on my shoulders.
Gospel artists, choir leaders, personalities need to be quick. And they need to be quick about the support. So we don't want to belabor the point, and maybe we'll follow up later and see like the aftermath. But today's subject matter is something very near and dear to not just our hearts, but also it is sort of permeating the culture. It's in the zeitgeist right now. It's like out there. Mm-hmm. And that is mental health. Mm-hmm. And we brought Dr. Dela Cruz here just because this is one of his specialties.
Yeah. Yes.
And partly because he's a little crazy.
All right, that's right.
So he's an expert, and he helps people to deal with their crazy. Mm-hmm. And just as and this is religiously incorrect, so we don't have the perfect language. We don't have the perfect lingo. We're here to talk as human beings who happen to be pastors. But we first want to talk about the growth, and in the good way, an acceptance of the need for mental health care, self-care, you know, what we started talking, you know, that's become the term self-care, caring for oneself emotionally, looking after oneself mentally, and not just attributing everything to spirituality, not just calling our young people bad or misbehave, not just looking at a woman as unstable or, you know, you're just a wild chick or whatever. So what have you seen in the last 10 years or so or 5 years or so that has encouraged you, particularly in the black community, about mental health?
Well, what I could start off by saying is some of our more celebrity individuals are talking more about mental health issues. I'm trying to remember her name. She's on Black-ish, and she's the mother of
Tracee Ellis Ross.
She has a book out now, and she shares about her individual battle with mental illness and some of the things and how maybe that mental illness has started. So we're getting more celebrities who are talking about it, and athletes. There are a couple of athletes, one who has just retired. He played for the Chicago Bears. He's on Showtime. I can't remember his name, but athletes are talking about it now. It appears that the more freer we become, the more freer we give ourselves liberating moments.
Right.
To say, wait a minute, something's wrong. I've been feeling a certain way for a very long time, and it's interfering with my relationships. Because usually that's how you determine. Absolutely. Why aren't my relationships growing? Why do people seem to stay away from me? Why is it that I'm not happy when everybody else is happy?
Mm-hmm.
And so now the intent to be mentally healthy has stretched a little bit for us, the desire to want to be. And I think that that's due to our growth as a people.
And you said not just the desire to want to be, but the need to be.
Yes, the need,
well, now, take us back, Jeff. What did we used to call, poor mental health? What did we sort of misdiagnose that when we were coming up? When you see somebody who's not behaving or seems to be off, what did we sort of attribute that to in the past?
I would, Me personally, it was almost retardation.
Slow.
Yes. Uh-huh. You know, we made jokes about the yellow school bus. And, you know, and it was so bad back then where, you know, they literally had classes in the basement. So you know if they was going in the basement.
Sure. Oh yeah, you know where or up on some high floor or segmented place.
Yeah, some of them were even outside the school in a trailer. So and we looked at those people as if they were different.
Right.
Instead of they were equal, they just had a learning disability or or a mental illness as we would say.
And even when you get into adults, you just have, you know, angry black woman.
Right.
You know, if you know, even if you're not a churchified person, because that sort of Judeo-Christian black church thing kind of permeates the culture, it's a demon.
Right. We call it a spirit.
It's a spirit. You need that prayed out of you. Right. And I watched tragically that happen one time. Young lady coming up, and it's like she doesn't need another prayer. She needs help.
That's right.
And truth be told, the more we impose, especially if you come out of certain faith tradition that are a little more aggressive than others spiritually, the more you impose that atmosphere on them, I hate to say you're almost inviting something that wasn't there to be there. And then you're sort of, it's like giving unnecessary medicine. Like if you keep giving me medicine, if I'm not sick, I'm going to keep thinking I am sick in ways that I'm not.
Sure.
And I mean, how many times, because we know it, as quiet as it's kept, a lot of our church experiences that we call deliverance are quite the traumatic experiences.
Sure.
I mean, how many times are you going to push me on the floor and dump oil on me?
And scream
in my ear. And there's enough voices in my head. I don't need anybody else hollering at me.
By the way, a couple of studies that were done that people who did not have as severe any mental or emotional issues were able to not exercise a spirit, but express more. Stress.
Right.
And they were actually felt better after screaming or after yelling.
Right.
But let's add a little bit of context to this.
Okay.
Historically, you know that we've always been prevented from the very best of any kind of care.
That's correct.
Both medical, mental, and emotional. So we always turned within ourselves to get whatever knowledge we needed. Right. So it was either the mother who would talk to you and listen to you and had a discernment that she could give you the wisdom. And this is also when we valued older wisdom.
As correct.
Dr. Thomas of Christian Seminary talks about, we valued it a lot more. So we had no choices in the matter to seek health care and or psychological care in other places. Well, now that is changing, we're still fighting with the lack of trust for the medical community,
that's true,
for the psychological community, and with all of the advances we've made, we still have not taken the full advantage of the insurance we have.
Right. You know, some people don't even know.
Insurance.
They don't even know that mental care is a part of health care.
Yes.
Most people really don't even explore it.
Yeah. They talk about it to us at our job. Let me ask you a question. You know, when we're talking in particularly about the African American community, it has always been a, you know, unwritten rule that goes on in this house stays in this house.
Don't tell your business to nobody.
And so I guess my question is there a difference in ratio as far as the Caucasian community coming forward in the black community? I don't know if you know or not, but in your studies, do you see that?
And I've pastored both white and black churches. Hmm. I've pastored Latino people, Polynesian.
See how he said that? Say that again.
You know, Latino.
I said
Puerto Rican.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm a black Puerto Rican. Right? And our European brothers and sisters, in a heartbeat, came to me for counseling long term. Thank God I was qualified to be able to give long-term counseling from anything from schizophrenia to drug and alcohol addiction to severe or moderate depression. But they were quick about trusting, hey, let's go to a professional that does it. where we have to be cajoled and pressed and pushed. And that part of that's the fear of them versus us. You know, sometimes we'll be looking for a black counselor and we might not be able to find a black counselor.
Does that affect their ability to feel that that person can truly relate?
Yes, that's the other part too. And then there's also the issue of not only can they relate, but are they qualified to counsel? You've got some folks, well, I want to get a Christian counselor. Well, do you need a Christian surgeon for heart surgery?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You need a surgeon. You need a trained,
a good one.
Educated, good surgeon to work on your heart. Well, that's the same in psychology. There are ways that must be processed for us, and we need it because we're dealing with our oppression as a people, and we're dealing with the stress of our own lives.
And, you know, you just said that it's a layered, and black people, I will never make it out to be an excuse or a cop-out, but black people will always have the extra layer.
Yes.
On top of the pressure of life is the oppression of society.
That's right.
And whether it's historical, whether it is, you know, for, as I was talking to a news caster today about, you know, he was saying, tell me about your, you know, experiences with racism and prejudice. And I couldn't point to the time I was made to get up out of a restaurant. But I could say I've always lived with the knowledge that I am surrounded by individuals who I may not know who is who. As our old folks from down south would say, at least down south you knew who hated you.
That's right.
At least down south you knew which street to stay away from, where not to go. Here, you don't know who's out for your job or who's going to use something against you or whatever. Right. But that knowledge that it's just there, we literally feel haunted.
Yes.
That's almost where that movie Us sort of speaks to.
Yeah.
The black people living with the haunting of racism and oppression. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the pressure that our Caucasian brothers and sisters, who may also have some additional pressures of their own, but we see them as sort of default. They just have problems. Mm-hmm. We have oppression and problems.
Right. And then we kind of demote the importance of emotional and psychological healing to Pat phrase as well, that's a generational curse.
Oh.
You know, well, what are you talking about?
You talking about my grandmama?
Right. I mean, we're cursed because we're broken and sinful. So there's going to, naturally, there's some things that come with that that are going to be a part of us as human beings.
Now, let's unpack that. I want to stay right there. Mm-hmm. Because what you just said, you know what popped in my mind? How every time a black person gets sick, you got to have some ginger ale and take a nap. You know,
castor oil,
ginger ale, drink some orange juice.
Get some Vaseline. That's all you
put
need.
Put some Vicks on it.
You'll be fine.
Put some Vicks on it.
You're not wrong.
Daddy, I broke my leg. Put some Vicks on it.
That's it.
And what you just said, those pat phrases are like the ginger ale of mental health. Mm-hmm. It's the generational curse. It's the demon spirit. It's the, and not to say that it might not be true, but it's the, I need to clear my space and I need to unfriend everybody.
Yeah,
I need to cut everybody off.
Know, I got to surround myself with all positive people. You know, when you're going to be by yourself
that's
for
like,
the rest of
like
your life.
That's covering yourself in pillows.
Yeah,
you know, like, you can't live like that.
And Christianity is not an escapist religion.
Thank you.
Christianity is something that gives you the power to face. Every time you read in scripture, they tell you what the sickness was. Mm-hmm. They tell you who it was in, the gender it was in, the gender of the person, because they never wanted to avoid evil.
Well, wait a minute.
Or brokenness.
Wait a minute, Rev.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Don't you claim that sickness.
There you go.
Don't you speak that. I think I'm depressed. Before I get the deep. Before I get depressed,
lay hands on yourself.
You better speak over yourself.
Don't tell me what's wrong with me.
Like there is
an
inherent
everything that's right with me.
But the idea that there's an inherent like saying I'm sick is like pouring flu virus in you.
Right. That's not.
But what you just said is that it's liberating to name it.
Yes, it is.
And you said everything. What it is, who's dealing with it, how long they've been.
And the socioeconomic.
Yes.
Think about a black woman who is in church. She's got three children. Mm. Her child may have just had a child, and she's got a grandchild, and she is holding it down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is holding it down. You don't think that you think it's a generational curse that she's depressed? Are you kidding? No, we're talking about real live issues that can receive help for. We can receive help for, and we don't do it because we've made going, if you're not bleeding, then you're not sick.
Right.
You know, if you don't have canker sores, you're not sick. If you don't, if your leg isn't broken, you're not sick. But I also understand how we've had to do that on our own over and over and never trust anyone. So now breaking that cycle is vitally important for Black folk.
So is it a illness in and of itself to feel like you as the pastor has to fix all these problems?
Yeah, that is well, first of all, the transition is good to transition in that, because many Black pastors are not qualified.
I ain't.
I mean, it's just
hey, y'all,
the truth.
Listen,
it's just the truth.
I'll pray for you.
They're not qualified.
But when it gets to a certain level, I'm like,
not,
listen, form help.
Yes, right. That's
steward,
right.
Steward, mercy.
Right. They're I'm not, sorry, because you're not qualified.
And you would be, if I went out, if I tried to do a liver transplant on you in my basement.
Right.
I would be arrested for medical malpractice, impersonating a doctor.
Right,
to this point, I'm a pastor.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor.
Exactly.
And watch this. 99% of us, even when we say we doctors, even if it's real, because a lot of men, even if it's real, it probably is not a doctor that has anything to do with any actual medical. Even if it's theological, still doesn't mean it's psychological.
No, it's not.
I could be a genius in the Old Testament.
Yes.
That don't mean I'm going to help that single mother.
Uh-uh. There are individuals in the Black community, Black theologians, who have written so wonderfully in both areas, theology and psychology.
That's what I was going to get.
And so when you have such dynamic individuals who can help you, why would you go to someone that they really can't help this? A couple of reasons. One, it's free. You know, well, I ain't got to pay no money.
I'm
you
free.
Know? Yeah, pastor free. Just go on and send them over there. You know?
I have no fees.
Yeah,
you better make sure you paid your tithes.
Right.
Better pay them tithes, though.
Yeah, you know, pastor free.
Well, you're getting the five-minute
special.
That's
right. the second is probably ego. Well, I can handle this. I'm saved.
Right.
I'm saved. But ego, if it's not teachable, if it can't open up and say I'm a disciple, that in the sense of I need to learn about this, you shouldn't handle that.
Right.
You, actually, the norm is to see them twice, get a sense of what it is they're dealing with, and then refer. But we're not doing that.
Right.
You're getting a lot of issues where the sickness may be exacerbated because people who are uninformed and not trained are dealing with something they don't have no business.
You said something else that really touched me, because you said how do we marry psychology and theology?
Mm.
People like Carl Jung, who have been able to do very well in these
areas. That's
a very
good point.
You know, how do we marry that? How do we?
Do you know that most of your major behavioral therapists, Freud, the names will come to me. They come from religious backgrounds.
Right.
Mm. Very stern religious backgrounds sometimes, but religious backgrounds nonetheless. We separate so that we can have our own territory, which means we don't help more people. And so when you actually say, okay, pastor, there's a place that you deal with the soul that I can't deal with theologically. I mean, you do that deal, and there's a place I can deal with that you can't. How about we partner?
Right.
And we work on this together. Because if in fact my goal is to see that the other, now think about that. Christianity is the other. Mm. Not me, the other. If I could see that other person gets better, and it's on my end not to do harm, because in counseling, it's do no harm.
Right.
then we've got something in common for humanity, not something personal for ourselves.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong in saying, and I'll say this openly, I got my psychologist on speed dial. You feel me?
The psychologist has, y'all hear that?
Right. I got mine
the
on
professional
speed
got
dial.
The professional
Pittsburgh.
On speed
yes,
dial.
Yes, because the stressors of life need a place for healing talk. And because they do turn into different things and exacerbate in your body and in your mind in different ways. And it really is time for us as a community to stop trying to self-help and go to people that are professionally qualified to do it.
But it's also unlearning just learned behaviors. Yes. Some of it's not all ego, and it's
that's
not all
right.
we
right.
think the preacher's more
yes,
than he
sir.
Is. It's
yes,
just
sir.
That's all
that's
we've
right.
ever had.
That's true. That's right.
We talked about how
that's
we don't
right.
know
that's
who to
history.
Call.
That's
if I
history.
Opened up the telephone book, I wouldn't know where to start, mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. good, who's bad. Mm-hmm. And that's a trusted
yes, sir.
Figure
the other
who
part,
loves you,
yes,
who cares
that,
about
that's
you.
That's right. The other part is, too, most of your working poor don't have as much time and access.
They couldn't fit it in
they
if they wanted to.
They couldn't fit it in, right? They still got to bring the kids to school. There's a lot of
Absolutely.
Things that they have on their plate that if they feel if they ignore it, that would bring them down further.
And, I mean, that's a great point what you just said about the socioeconomic status mm-hmm. of a person.
Yes.
I mean, for instance, Jeff and I being, you know, still have young children.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do we have to look for a babysitter to get away to that
sure.
banquet
sure.
once every 3 months
right.
or that date night or
mm-hmm.
whatever or a nice church service I have to be at?
Mm-hmm.
What does it sound like for me to say to a loved one, hey, can you watch my kids while I go to counseling?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We don't even
exactly.
talk about the stigmas.
Right. right.
Not
That's
just the
right.
stigma of counseling, but the mm-hmm. stigma of how you prioritize mm-hmm. something that has been invisible
right.
to a community for so long.
That's right.
And, you know, I leaned on my parents to watch the kids when I have an important function. I mm-hmm. leaned on my friend. And now I'm asking you to, you know, I got to find space.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
I'm barely fitting in soccer practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm barely fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running from here to Bible study. And that's... And I don't mean to say anything, but some of the most stable among us.
Right.
What about that person
That's
who's
right.
working 2-3 jobs?
That's right.
Who
exactly.
is
and
fighting to keep their house together?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if
mm-hmm.
they walk away from their house for an hour, they don't know what they'll walk back
That's
to.
That's right. That's right.
You
it's
know,
not,
I got
not,
some mothers. I got 6-7 kids.
Yeah.
It is not embarrassing. It is not embarrassing. And I need the world to know. It's not. It is not embarrassing for you to say I need help.
Yes. Yes.
I need help.
Now,
yes.
can we flip to the other side? Because we have a few minutes on this segment
okay.
left. Do you see an overdependence or an overdiagnosis now that every time there's a problem, people say, well, I can just blame it on being mental?
Yeah.
Or like, once something becomes accepted,
sure.
it can sometimes,
sure.
you know, right. bear the mm-hmm. risk of being exploited.
Yeah, it doesn't seem
or
to be
excuse.
A
it becomes an
yeah.
excuse,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
popular vernacular.
I think even to go with that real quick, mm-hmm. because I know you're going to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, you know, it seems like nowadays every kid is on Ritalin.
Yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
on something.
Yeah.
Get them some
yeah.
Ritalin. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think every kid needs
sure.
Ritalin.
One comedian said, now if the kid looks out the window and says, I want to play, you know, to like drug him up, you know, like kids are supposed to want to
sure,
be.
Sure,
Like I want to go
right.
outside and play with that ball.
Right.
Give him some drugs.
Right.
You know.
A lot of it is from what we don't know. I remember when I learned human development in college
mm-hmm.
and learned that my teenager was acting a certain way on purpose.
Huh.
You know, this is the way you're supposed to act when you're 14.
This is where you're at.
This is where they're at. So a lot of times it's not knowing. But the other part is that the wealth gap has allowed for people to have a quality of life through science.
Wow.
There
wow.
is a and why is it that we're not of it's not available to us.
It's not.
In all actuality, real quick, when you take medication, you're supposed to, it's a bird with two wings. You're supposed to then be in some kind of psychotherapy.
To go with it. It's not just, I need my pills. I ain't on my pills today.
Wow.
I ain't on my pills today.
Because after you feel better, if you don't learn how to rethink.
Wow.
Right? Then you're still going to be in the same place. You're just going to feel better, but
yes,
you're going to do the
yes.
same things.
Right.
So, again, there's just so much that I think that there may be an over-medication in some parts of our country, but it's not in most parts.
Okay.
It really isn't.
Okay.
I don't think so.
A bird with two wings. I love
that. I like
mm-hmm.
that.
I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
This has been the first segment of Religiously Incorrect.
Before we end this segment, let me just say, my wife said, well, I think every church ought to have a psychologist there. And I said, that's incorrect, because they're going to cost more than a pastor.
Listen.
And y'all ain't taking my side.
I love y'all. I love y'all.
Right. I don't love y'all that much. You're going to have to come up with some big time. And
I will have a stack of business cards right. at the back of the church. But you ain't taking my money. We going to see y'all in a little bit. Hang tight. Check us out for part two, Religiously Incorrect Podcast. So you are previewing episode 5 of Religiously Incorrect. Yes, I got sir. Pastor Jeff.
Yes, sir.
And we have Dr. Angel De La Cruz.
The doctor.
You know, he is the most intimidating preacher I know because he will kill you and preach your funeral. He will. You mess with him the wrong way, he will jack you up and visit you in the hospital.
And revive you.
And then revive you.
Revive you. Bring you back to life. And tell you he love you.
Exactly. In Jesus' name. So if you're watching, be sure to like, share. And by the way, we are on all podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We really would like to see you subscribe there because that helps us to boost our brand and get the message out further. So Amen. Be sure to follow us.
And please leave a comment as well.
Comment.
Leave some comments.
Argue.
Let us know. Let us know. I mean, you're not going to win the argument.
I'm not answering you.
But leave one anyway.
I mean, you're not.
You ain't that important.
You don't get a mic.
You ain't the pastor.
Right. Testify. Tell the goodness of the Lord.
Yes, sir.
But for real, you can comment. You can share. If you think we're totally off base, you say what you want to say. If it's blessing you, if it's helping you, please let somebody know. That's what we want. Our subject tonight has been mental health.
Yes.
And if you missed part one, which you did, you want to check the entire podcast because we talked about how mental health has grown in acceptance, particularly in the black community, how pastors are not always or most likely are not qualified mental health professionals, mm-hmm. and how we need to remove the stigma of attaching, sort of misdiagnosing
sure.
mental health, including in spiritual terminology. Yes, everything ain't a demon.
Right.
Everything's not a generational curse.
I
remember here's my quote. A generational curse has become the ginger ale of mental health.
Right.
For black folk.
Yes.
So listen, right. I'm gonna tweet that later. Everything that's a mental health problem is not a generational curse.
That's right.
Just like you can't fix every sickness with ginger ale. Listen.
Dr. Cruz talked about a bird with two wings. You gotta watch it to see that. It was
you gotta watch it.
I'm telling you,
you
some good stuff.
So check this out. Jeff, we will just dive right into it because the people want to hear the content.
Yes.
We talked about mental health in general in the black community. Now we want to hone in, Dr. De La Cruz, on mental health with pastors and
sure,
church leaders.
Sure.
Now, we have seen a tragic spike mm-hmm. in suicides among clergy.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing in high-pressure situations that we normally associate with mega churches and large ministries, and mm-hmm. we're even seeing some smaller ministries, family churches, mm-hmm. mid-sized churches, pastors. And I don't like to use this word. We would say like cracking and all that
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
Succumbing mm-hmm. to certain pressures and the constrictions that seem to come on them that aren't just the pressures of life that we all go through, financial mm-hmm. pressures, marriage, mm-hmm. family, children, but the responsibility that's sacred and heavy mm-hmm. for the spiritual health and well-being of groups of people.
Sure.
And you talked about some dynamics when we were sort of offline, and we want to sort of unpack that. But let's just talk about the overall pressures that pastors feel. And I'm not looking for the anniversary sermon,
sure.
pastors have it hard right. and all
sure.
that stuff. We
sure.
we hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little digging deeper mm-hmm. into how that might manifest in the life of a minister or a
okay.
church leader.
I think, number one, there is it's one of the reasons why we're ordained, right? Because we get a picture of the depth of responsibility we have as human beings for the souls of the congregant members we serve. And so God is letting us know, hey, you've got a lot of responsibility here,
mm-hmm.
and it's gonna bear weight on your heart, it's gonna bear weight on your person, and it's gonna bear weight on your life overall, including your family.
Wow.
That doesn't just include you got to work every day or you got to raise your children in the same environments as any other parent does, be concerned about the same things like paying your bills and paying your taxes. So you've got that responsibility or that depth of spiritual heaviness. Let's call it that.
Right.
Then you have the expectations of the culture you're in.
Wow.
Sometimes the church culture is what is a driving force in the lack of mental health for pastors.
Wow. So church culture can be the driving force.
Yes.
In the lack of, unpack that.
If there's a culture in the church that the pastor is supposed to have all the answers. Matter of fact, he or she is supposed to be able to discern when you're sick and when you're not.
Right, right.
This
you should have knew I was going through.
Yeah, right. You should have known it. If I wasn't here, there's 100 people in the church, and I don't see you like I used to, but I didn't see you, so I didn't, you know, the pressures that you shouldn't be under because you're the pastor.
Right.
Like, you don't go through the same pressures I do. You're the pastor. All of these, and that's kind of church culture.
Right.
No, you can't. Yours is the family we put up so that we can use that as an image to become.
Right.
Rather than pressing toward together in partnership to live out the biblical mandate. I've often said, the epistles are not for the world.
The epistles are
for the church.
They're for the church.
Yes.
And when Paul deals with leadership and membership and how they're supposed to be family, that's a healthy atmosphere. Mothers and fathers. But when you're the pastor and you're set aside because you need to measure up into the image I've created for you, That's a culture that's usually harmful.
Doc, let me ask you something. You know, when I would be going out of town a lot of times, I would get a phone call, especially when we were all going for Thanksgiving, say Thanksgiving is coming up, and they would call me and they would say, Where you at, Jeff? We here already. I would get frustrated.
Sure.
Not because I wasn't on the right path,
right,
but because I hadn't arrived yet.
Because you weren't there yet.
Yeah. What about pastors who haven't arrived yet?
Wow.
Especially when they have ministerial friends who are already there.
Yeah.
And it becomes a stress on them that, you know, I still have the small church.
Sure, sure.
I still have the corner store church. And my friends, those I might have graduated seminary with, are all further much ahead of me.
And I don't feel like, it, just bouncing off of what Jeff said, you know, I don't feel like my current situation matches my talents and giftings,
I almost feel like
I'm being wasted.
Yes, sir.
You know, how does that play into that?
Well, here is where I think, and this was referenced to on an interview by Dr. Frank Thomas and Bishop Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And Bishop Clark was asked the question, what do you think is happening amongst ministers now? And I may not be getting it exact, or what do they need? And he was talking about we need depth.
I saw that, yeah.
He said we need depth. And the depth that so many young ministers or ministers maybe younger than me are going to is they'll talk about depth from this century versus the 2,000 years
of
Christianity that encourages us to say, wait a minute, St. Ignatius was a small church pastor. Or John Wesley was an itinerant pastor who sometimes was depressed and felt like he wasn't up to his call, but he went to the ancients. He counted, and I include church mothers and fathers, because there were writers of both. And of course, the Bible is male dominated and male written.
Right.
So it doesn't include
the female perspective and presence.
So there are people who wrote and talked about the life of the pastor, like the rule of Saint Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that you read in seminary because your ordination has required you to be able to go to that material from all those years ago and encourage yourself.
But we've overlooked what you said, the context that some of those great men and women that we venerate, and we put some of these people in mega churches that they didn't have. Mm-hmm. We give them fame that they never had.
That's right.
You know, some folk, as we always say, they don't love you till you're dead. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, we weren't really paying attention to them. Their contemporaries weren't really respecting them. And how much, speaking to that depth in younger generations especially, but I think older ones get caught up in it too, trying to play catch up, is the culture of comparison.
Right.
The social media. Yeah. It used to be, and I'm not saying like I'm that old, but I would hear older ministers say things. I was just talking with some of our mentor ministers in my young pastor's thriving group about how you just kind of heard about this guy that was really blowing up and doing pretty well or had taken over a great church. Mm-hmm. Now we see everybody's ministries every day. Mm-hmm. Just like in natural life, people are pressured to exaggerate or sort of just kind of fudge the numbers a little bit.
Everybody
has
access.
How much you running, Doc?
How much you running over here, Doc?
I had at least 175 this week. And I slayed them all.
Anniversary for me. Bring all your choirs.
And when I show up, here we go. And when I show up, only a portion of my people can travel. Bro, this is your church and the church next door. But the culture of comparison, I see it played out, and this might tag at a few people, in the way that we present ourselves, we market ourselves.
Right, that's right.
We make the most foily, flyer, fire doves. You know, we will put pictures of other people's churches and cities we don't live in on the backs of our flyer.
There are pastors that have started marketing businesses.
Yes.
For churches, right? But the other thing, too, is
branding.
Not only comparison, but the competition.
Competition.
And that's American culture.
Right.
That is capitalism.
Christian capitalism.
Yeah, that's capitalism. That's not Christianity. When I got to compare, the matter of fact, Paul said, you don't compare yourself with your brother. Jesus even said, hey, the disciples were saying, hey, he's casting out demons in your name. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to know who that was, too.
Right.
There's got to be something on him somewhere.
It was Benny Hinn.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He about that old.
He's
about
that. You are in the crew. Welcome to Religiously Incorrect, Dr. Dela Cruz.
Hey, and then he started.
Hallelujah.
Y'all ain't right.
Don't curse me, Doc. Don't curse me, Dr. Hinn. I love you.
But you get the competition, and guess what? Your members go to those conferences, and when they come back, they put the unrealistic expectation
there it is.
On you. Well, how come our church, how come it isn't? And we don't, we're always so non-confrontational, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or don't want to offend anyone. Which we're actually suppressing a great.
I was just going to say, we're internalizing, right? We're internalizing responses we wish we could have made, things we could have said, and now we are burning up on the inside with no outlet.
Exactly. And that is what leads to the mental illness. That's what leads to, well, then I'm not, you're serving 50 people faithfully whose children you've baptized, whose daughters you've married and sons you've counseled. You made a difference in the kingdom of God, but because somebody has said you want to compare your part of the kingdom to her part of the kingdom, you're not worth anything. And of course, you get the stupid theologies that are out there that say, hey, you know, if you ain't got a big church, you ain't got no faith.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure, but with learning, and this is where it's just my desire that more and more pastors go to seminary, because they'll learn about the church mothers and fathers who went through the same thing. Do you know that Mother Teresa has writings about how she doubted God?
Wow.
Here's a woman who goes to another country with no money, gives up her inheritance. She was an heiress. She gave up her inheritance and started an order with nothing in another country. She had doubts? Yes. It's called being human.
Right.
It's called walking with the divine as a finite person.
So as we look at that.
Go ahead.
Well, go ahead.
Not only do the members come back, but the pastor comes
does too.
Because he goes there and they tell him five ways to build a church.
That's
formula for evangelism. And they come back and they try all. Because I've been a Propel. I've been to these big conferences.
And we try everything. We had an ice cream truck outside the church. We had Jumping Jack Sunday. You know,
each ministry is different.
You got 80-year-old preachers in skinny jeans.
And half of them come from the, you know, where they're at.
I mean,
you're talking about somebody in Detroit or New York, mm-hmm. and you're trying to bring this formula to war. Yeah,
bro, I'm in Quimby Park.
Right.
In Warren. I'm on the jungle gym, dog. Right. Ain't no, that's my youth ministry. Right. My youth ministry is the jungle gym next door to the church.
Right. Faith is not a formula. Faith is being faithful to the God you have not seen, but know he's alive.
Wow.
He's alive. So if I'm being faithful in Warren, then I'm doing what God requires of me where I am. And so I often wonder, because it has happened to me as a young minister. I'm going, wow, you know, why isn't anyone responding? So you go to learn more, you go to do more. When in all actuality, God is saying, can't you understand I've called you to a specific moment and I've called you to a specific time and place? I'm here with you.
Right.
You know, for some reason, and it is the competition. It is, look at what he's doing. Look at what she's doing. And I'm not doing anything. And then people are wanting something.
Always.
That pressure of the culture of the church has to take some responsibility for the emotional sicknesses of pastors. Because they are very, very
rewind,
tough.
Say it again. The church
has to take some responsibility for the emotional distresses and sicknesses of pastors. Because they're expecting things that are not biblical, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, don't know what the Bible expects. So, because that's enough right there. And I think it's intimated, but I'm not sure. He says, for you must care for their souls.
Yes.
There are places, I heard one preacher, I think it was Pastor Clark, he said, there are very few things I will bang my hand on the table for, right? That we ain't going to do that. You're going to have to get a different pastor if you're going to do that here. Because we've been called to that specific moment,
too.
And so there's just a lot of pressure on pastors that is unnecessary, and part of it is the congregation.
And I want to talk about, you know, since there's a responsibility there that has sort of permeated the entire church culture, you know, I had to relearn how to be emotionally vulnerable before my congregation and sort of release myself from the Messiah complex. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what happened. Being at my church at Second, doing a lot more funerals.
Sure.
Than I was doing at my father's church, which was relatively young and didn't have the same breadth and width of influence that sort of people gravitate, cousins, uncles.
Sure.
When I faced, and Jeff was there with me, some tragedies, when I had to bury some children, you know, I'll never forget the one I had to do. And all of Warren, of course, knows it was a car wreck. I shouldn't have even viewed myself.
Wow.
If I had been wiser.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I wouldn't. I'm trying to be there for the family. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And I was haunted, got through the service, and broke down the next day in church. Mm-hmm. Thank God for a loving church.
Yeah.
I've learned, you know, and what I've gone through with the trauma of our family this year, I've learned how to be vulnerable. But what you said about responsibility, we go back to that joke about the ginger ale. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have churchy fixes that aren't necessarily healthy for the pastor.
Sure.
It might placate or make the church feel like they've done, you know, oh, the pastor was sad today, I'm going to bake him a cake.
Right.
You know,
right.
or if he was a few extra dollars, let's make sure we give him a good offering and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was one powerful scene in, I used to watch Mad Men when it was on AMC.
Yeah, I did too.
And that young upstart Peggy, when she was becoming a really good, she has an argument with the top guy and the top creative guy, and she's not feel appreciated. She's having emotional problems. And he screams at her, that's what the money's for.
Yeah.
And she wanted something much deeper.
Yeah, that's right.
Than the money. And so I'm not saying don't bake me cakes, because you know who you are. Right. That red velvet cake. I need another one real soon.
Don't stop giving me pound
don't
cakes.
Don't stop.
Pound cakes.
Don't stop. But what are some more substantial things that congregations and church culture can offer or open up the door for pastors that would help during those pressure times?
I think validating their need to sometimes, if they need to be able to go see a psychologist and won't be demonized as weak or as somebody who can't lead me. Part of it is we think that God is not in science, right? When the Lord is in science.
He made it all.
He has reconcile the world, and that means knowledge, science, philosophy. Not just a part of the world, it's all the world, it's everything.
Wow.
And so to validate and tell and say to him or her, we have not only your health insurance available, but we have mental health insurance available for you too. One of the good things in the mainline is that they understood that for mainline pastors. I have mental health insurance so that it won't cost me, take all the money out of my pocket.
Right.
But if I need somebody, I can go and talk to them.
Wow.
And then the congregation being not image conscious, but heart loving, right? Say, I'm going to love the pastor. Look,
right.
Don't put all that pressure on her. Come on now. Her mother just died. Think about when you go through a season where somebody you love dies.
Absolutely.
And you're not allowed to grieve like anyone else. There's something out of order with that. And that's because of stardom of pastors, capitalism of the church.
Messiah complex.
Yeah, Messiah complex. And believe me, it's a part of a social context to be encouraged. Hey, atta boy, atta girl, you're doing
a
great job.
Yeah.
You can make it.
Right.
But it's when it is, you are made something other than a human being.
Right.
You should be a brother as well as a pastor.
Right.
A sister as well as a pastor. Why can I not be your pastor and your brother? And sometimes, my brothers, we're going to need to do it whether they like it or not.
Yes.
Now, I do that. I will do that. I've done it because I just could no longer bear this kind of pressure.
Right.
I had to just say, look, I can't say anything today. There are meetings because of the things that have happened. I'll go, I can't go to that meeting today. I'm going to have to, and I don't skip my responsibilities.
Right.
I believe in faithfulness. Holiness Church.
Oh yeah.
Taught me faithfulness.
You're going to be there.
That's right. You're going to be there no matter what. But that let me know that I need to do that for the sake of others.
Can I talk to you about, because we talked about accountability of the congregation.
Mm.
What about accountability of the pastor? And I'm talking from a personal standpoint. Where I went through something very traumatic this year, where I was extremely depressed, really ready to give up. And if I didn't have my brother right here, to really talk to, you know, almost every day, you know, he would say, just call, man, just
sure,
call,
sure.
Just call, you know, and, you know, we read the statistics where a lot of pastors commit suicide, and it says because they didn't have anybody to talk, including their spouse.
That's
didn't have anybody,
that's
including
isolation is isolation of the pastorate, yeah.
Right.
It's particular to Western pastors. We've been so intent on being individuals.
It's our culture.
It's American culture. I can do this by myself. Then we don't go, man, I got to call Todd.
Right.
I cannot carry this anymore. The image is not as important as me getting some help.
Yes.
And when you have brothers and sisters that you can cry with, that you can talk to, that can say, man, this is wrong. And what can we do? Or let me just listen. And if they need to say, hey, I got somebody you can talk to.
Right.
Here, let me reference you. So, yeah, the thing is, though, what we don't do is we don't grieve very well.
Mm.
We really don't.
And grief is not just about death.
Yes, it's about loss, yes. Period.
Loss.
You were given something and it was taken away, or you thought something was going to happen and then it all blew up in your face. That's traumatic, man. That is traumatic. And people need to understand that we're not superhuman. We're Christians like everyone else who's been given another responsibility. And so, I think it's having places, man, where if I curse, I'm not going to hell.
I don't even curse, but every once in a while.
You know what I mean?
Every once in a while. Jeff taught me how to curse.
Look.
He taught me.
In counseling, from Youngstown. Especially when someone comes and visits me, that's the first thing. I'll say all the major words.
Just give it to him.
Right off the bat. This is a
judgment
free.
I'm going to start doing that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, right.
Let's do it now.
Right. just to get it off our chest, right?
This is a whole new version of setting the atmosphere.
That's right.
This is religiously incorrect. Mother.
Let's
set the atmosphere.
And I often say this is a non-judgmental zone.
Right.
There's nothing here that's going to condemn you, and God is not really interested in light stuff like that. One theologian, his name was St. Moses, I think, of the early 300s. He said, I got too many other things to worry about, like men beating on their wives, people ripping off the poor. He was naming all these big things he had to be concerned about. He says, am I going to be concerned with you having a lager of beer on Tuesday night? No, there are too many other things. We're majoring on the minor. Your heart is broken, man.
Right.
Your heart is broken.
Right.
And what did Jesus say? I come to heal the broken heart. So that doesn't include mine.
Not to fix the potty mouths.
Yeah.
But to heal.
Right. See, because that comes overseas.
That's in the holiness version.
Yeah, right.
That's holiness version.
You got to straighten up that talk.
Right.
Peter knew how to do it better than
us. Right. Everybody can't be Peter now.
Right.
Everybody want to be Peter.
And I do that especially because we've been... There's an amount of guilt that's been put on us that does not come from the Holy Spirit.
Wow.
It does not. We're not
cultural
allowed.
Conditioning.
Yeah, exactly. You really should be angry when somebody hurts you. You should be sad when you lose someone. You should be glad when it's a joyous time. All of these feelings that we've been told, don't do this, you got to be superior. Paul said, in my weaknesses, I am made strong.
That's it.
I had a guy at the church that I'm at, currently pastoring at, say the other day in Sunday school, I don't cry anymore at funerals.
Mm.
Why?
Yeah.
Bro, I'm scared of you. I'm scared of you.
Yeah.
We might not weep.
He might have killed him.
As though.
Right.
I've been sending these CSI investigators to his house.
There's a grieving process that has to happen. Sure, you know, everybody got upset when LeBron left Cleveland and was burning his jersey. Mm-hmm. Right. Let him burn. Right. That's a grieving process.
They don't buy him again. They'll be
he
back.
Still got the money for it.
He already made the money.
And then came back like a boss.
Right, like a boss.
Won the whole thing.
And they bought him again.
Yep. That's a bad man.
I want to backtrack a little bit because we sort of covered the struggling, comparing himself. Mm-hmm. We're looking up at the lights and the glamour, and we're not there yet. But a lot of these issues of mental illness and suicide are happening to the so-called winners.
Yes,
the people we're looking to and saying, I aspire to have that, are the people who are suffering the burnout.
Right.
We've seen these tragic stories of people who seem to have an ideal life and probably do. They are blessed in those areas, but there were other pressures and other things that were poking at them that they just couldn't release. And they were at the mega church. Right. They were on full salary. They had the picturesque family.
Sure.
So what have you seen? And we want to talk a little bit about numbers. We talked a little bit about that before. The pressure that comes on when you do reach the pinnacle. So you got one level.
Right.
I ain't got nobody. My ministry hasn't taken off. I'm depressed. Now you have the pressure of actually getting there. And we see it with superstars. We see it with sports figures.
Sure.
Let's talk about that and the culture once again that's created that success we can't handle or the burden we weren't built to handle the burden.
I think when you have a loss of meaning in the life that you're living now, because meaning is not only when things are great, but meaning is found in your pain and in your suffering. We don't take the cross as this implement of shame and suffering and identify with a suffering. Huh. Christian, in theology, and it just seems like every other facet of emotional or spiritual healing has taken this on or has some kind of section for it, that pain is necessary in life. Hmm. Right? Victor Vogel, who created the Logos therapy or Logotherapy, says you can find meaning in the deepest of suffering. And now he's an Auschwitz survivor.
Wow.
Okay, so he
can, knows.
He knows, right? But who knows like
he
we
won.
Know?
He won the suffering.
Right, he sure did. Who knows like we know? How our ancestors know. How
absolutely.
We've taken, look at the four girls who were killed in the Alabama church in
16th Street Baptist Church.
Yeah, 16th Street. Are you kidding? You're talking about immense suffering, but we didn't say that was sinful or we shouldn't have that. Somehow we got some kind of really ridiculous philosophy or theology that says suffering is not a part of our religious experience.
Right.
Yes, it is.
It is. It is.
And I think that's what has happened. Now that you've got the money, the fame, and success, is that meaningful?
Right. Or are you just in the pressure to perform?
Yes.
Metrics, numbers, goals.
Because after you get the big building, now you got to pay the gas bill.
Yes. That's it.
Yes. Now you got to pay the light bill. Now you got to pay for the staff. Now you've got to bring in all of the... So was that you? Or was that God?
And lives are in the balance.
Yes.
And don't let your numbers drop. Don't let the people not show up.
Because then people start getting fired. You know, you start letting folk go before you look at yourself. I've seen numerous ministries that have done that kind of thing. So it's what is meaningful. Is this what God really wanted for you?
Right.
You know, we had a pastor who had a moral indiscretion. Couldn't take it.
Wow.
Killed himself. Again, what was important? Now, and I don't know anybody. It ain't my business who's going to heaven or hell. That ain't none. In my theology, it ain't none of our business. God says, I'm taking care of that. But what was it that you couldn't turn to someone and get help in a community of faith where you're supposed to have somebody else you can turn to?
Right, right.
But you know, in this dog eat dog world, me, Mr. Lowly Preacher, I can't wait to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to hear that so and so's numbers are down.
Yeah.
I want to hear. Yeah, you know he ain't pulling them like he used to.
Right.
I heard everybody leaving him and going,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know that we are contributing.
Yes, sir.
That spirit, if not the voice and the actual words themselves, I always joke with people. I say it always gets back one way or another.
Sure it does.
And
sure
you think
does.
That person who's at the top of the mountain doesn't feel all that pressure and nipping and hate and all of that?
Sure.
And you know how we talk when people are, you know, the only reason they got big because they was compromising.
Yeah.
Only reason they got big is because they wasn't real. They watered it down, and that's why the mass. Some people are preaching the unadulterated gospel. Mm-hmm. They are being real. They're having real Bible studies when the TVs aren't on, and they're growing. And then every church and every person has a life cycle.
Right.
You will have your ups and your downs. And we are like companies will kill ourselves to try to keep going up and won't accept the plateaus.
But we also have those personally, and continuing to answer your question, what does it mean to learn to be content? Right? I'm not satisfied where I am, but God says for me to be content with where he's got me here. I'm here with him. This is what he has for me to do. And I got to find that this is where God wants me. Not here, but right where I am. And that's something that we don't learn as Americans. We consume more. We consume 25% of the world's products. I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Give me, take. And it's all mine rather than, hey, do I have enough? And Paul says this in a doggone prison cell with rats crawling all over
right.
And feces water half an inch over his feet. Learn to be content.
Right.
Learn to be content. He was content with where God, he was with God. Wow. Not that he wanted to stay there.
But where he was with
but
God.
But where he was with God. Wow. And so that's another thing that contributes to.
One of the things I learned the other day was that Borders had the opportunity to buy Netflix. Was it Borders? No, it was not in the Borders. It was
Blockbuster. Yeah. Blockbuster had to buy Netflix.
Had the opportunity to buy Netflix.
Now, did that guy commit suicide?
No, but he did. He did lose everything.
Oh, okay.
He went under.
Mm-hmm. I shouldn't joke about that.
No, see, you have other companies like Kodak. Did they stop making pictures?
Right. Exactly.
You know, they never stopped making pictures. You know, so when people don't change. Mm-hmm. When people don't change, you know, with the time, and I think a lot of people get left behind, and because they get left behind, because they did not change with the times and with the seasons, right.
They live in regret. Right. They live in regret. The world has passed them by, mm-hmm. and what you brought up, and I'm grateful for your expertise and your
expert perspective.
Thank you
so much. Absolutely,
because it's more than just that. Like I said earlier, pastors got it hard, right. and y'all saints getting on the pastors' nerves and all that.
Right.
You know, pastors are human beings. Yes. What you just said about brother pastor in the first time I ever heard it was I really, you know, came into Second Baptist, mm-hmm. and one deacon in particular would always say that old school phrase. Now, brother pastor, that's it.
Yeah.
Brother pastor.
Right.
I'm Pastor Johnson.
Right.
But now, every once in a while I say, give me permission to be brother for about the next 5 minutes, and I promise I'll get back to pastor
when
I'm ready.
That's right.
But mental health is of the utmost importance, whether you are a lay member, whether you are a pastor, and dare I say, whether you are saved or unsaved.
Yes,
I tell you that getting saved might not fix your mental problem?
That's right.
If you got to go to a therapist first and then you make it down somebody's altar, God bless you. I hope God gives you the grace to make it there.
Right.
But don't even pretend like church and the quick fix of spirituality, the emotional moment at somebody's altar, mm-hmm. because so many times we present it that way.
Right.
We say irresponsible things. If the Lord's going to take it all away. No. You're still going to be sad when you leave baby.
Right.
You know, you're going to shake my hand and still be mad.
Right.
But we appreciate the expertise. Well, we're so sorry our time is limited, but you already have an open invitation back. We are going to drive and find you.
Awesome. Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
We're going to do a podcast in Pittsburgh.
Because
they lose it anyway.
Listen, bye.
Hey, Mike is my dude. That's my dude.
This is the Religiously Incorrect Podcast with our very special guest Pastor Angel Dela Cruz, and we want to thank Freeze Barbershop.
Look at it.
Come five down star here. Barbershop.
Hey, five star.
Over here on Youngstown. 4021.
Yeah.
4021 Youngstown Road. Come out here and get fresh. I solved the puzzle, so I got a free haircut. Right. I just want to say that publicly.
I'm gonna get
that free lineup. But come out, support black businesses. We appreciate being here in the shop. We appreciate you all tuning in. Please like and share this video. Excuse me. Make sure you follow us on YouTube. Subscribe. Share this. Tell people that there is real talk coming real raw and uncut at Religiously Incorrect. And we can't wait for our next episode.
God bless y'all.
Y'all take care.